Welcome back to another episode of the Mind of George Show. And this one feels like a fly on the wall or breaking the fourth wall because today's episode is literally with one of my mentors, dear friends, brothers, partners in crime, soul brothers, who is somebody I admire, look up to, and is a master. And I mean a true Renaissance man and master with the way of his words, with creation, with art, understanding tech, processes, practice, and all of these beautiful things. And we broke the wall because this is my brother and I. We have tears, we have deep conversations, and we really dialed in on how we're creating art in every moment and celebrating the art that we are, and how we get to develop a relationship with progress and process. And in the world that we're in today, things change so quick. And we've always heard that we have to be fast, we have to be quick. And this one really, really takes art, takes creation, takes the gift that you are, whether you're in your business as a products business, a service business, a influencer, creator, real estate, it doesn't matter, because everything we create in the world with our words, with our content, it's art, and it's about progress and understanding that process. And we break it all down, plus our own personal pieces, how we manage it, how we mitigate it, how we see it, and how we're all on the same journey, growing, getting better together. And my brother Nikhil is a magician with words, meaning I normally have to have a dictionary around me, but I ask him on the show to define the beautiful words that he uses. But this was a masterful dance in the creative process and really understanding how we win in this world and what we're creating. And so without further ado, I would like to get into the show. Thank you in advance for listening. Thank you, brother Nikhil, for being on the show. Thank you for sharing your genius, your wisdom, and helping all of these incredible entrepreneurs that are about to listen to this unlock their superpowers and really turn the volume knob of their light up, get it brighter, get it out into the world, and make a difference. And so get ready, get a notebook ready, get ready to pause, get ready to listen, get ready to do it all. And I can't wait to hear your feedback. So shoot me a DM, let me know how it goes. I love you all to pieces. Let's get into the show. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Mind of George Show. This one feels special because he's like my brother and my like life partner and one of my like coaches and dear friends and mentors and poets and Renaissance man and just a walking embodiment of like everything I feel like I strive to be as a man, as well as an entrepreneur and a friend and a genius, and his understanding of tech and knowledge and every level of language that you could ever speak in any form of anything to deliver a poetic clarity and install it into your soul is the gentleman who is gracing us with his presence today. And in full disclosure, I looked at him and I was like, Nikhil, we're boys, bro. Like, I ain't got an agenda. We can just coffee this thing. He's like, yeah. And then before this, we've been talking for, you know, a half an hour. And I'm like, this might turn into my raw therapy session or something of massive value or some coffee conversations to ponder on, or we talk about all of it, but who knows? And I'm just so ready for the ride. And so, Nikhil, without further ado, I'd love to officially welcome you on the show, bro.
Oh, thank you, brother. What can I say? It's just like, it's just magic and alchemy and so much richness just conversating with you and connecting with you. And I love how we flow together and the depth and how quickly we can just go to those places. And it's so beautiful. And you are such a potent mirror in my life. And I am celebrating this moment and this opportunity to be here with you and all these listeners, and honoring whatever comes through, knowing that it's perfectly divine. And I'm here for it.
Oh, bro, I had a thought like a week and a half ago when we were messaging right before the event. You know, when we were doing the it was like you did 4 minutes, I came back with four, you came back with six, I came back with six, you hit eight, I hit eight, and we were doing that exchange.
Yeah.
I had a thought and I was like, God, this would be the most valuable conversation to like share with people that are wondering like what behind the scenes conversations are when like friends or business people support each other. And then I was like, yeah, for real. And then you even just alluded to it at the beginning of this. And I've had a couple of instances lately, and I think this will give you something to chew on, where I've been on calls with my best clients, my absolute favorite clients. They're all my favorite, they're family, but like we'll get on a call and they'll have a list of like seven questions for me, right? And within the first 10 minutes of the call, we are through the entire list. It's like question, I'm like, I might try this, this. They're like, okay, next. And I've had two friends with me when I've been on calls with them, and they were like, that was the most valuable thing we've ever witnessed. I was like, what do you mean? They're like, they have like no resistance. Neither do you. It's like, if they have an idea, you're like, okay, how do we do it? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, you give them an idea. They're like, oh yeah, we could do it this way. I was like, isn't that the point that we're all doing this, is to be in decision territory and like instantly find the meat? And then I forget that like it's a muscle that isn't practiced often. And then you even said it to me, but that's something I crave about our conversations that I didn't even realize till this moment. Like, it'll be a week, or you went to India for a month?
Yeah, a month.
A month, and like the occasional downloads. But then it's like the moment we hear from each other. No, there's no surface. We're like 700,000 feet below the surface. And I was like, holy moly, here we out here now. Like, that's probably one of my favorite things, is like how instant deep we go when we talk.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And I mean, it's like my soul yearns for that richness and that depth, because it's in that depth that all the diamonds are forged, and like the core of the planet. And I love that space. And like you, I think we're comfortable in the traversing of the light and the dark and going all in. And it's soul food. Truly.
It's soul food. I feel like I crave that soul food. Like, that's like the thing that gives me, but it's so interesting too, because that soul food gives me so much light, and sometimes on the other side, so much darkness to walk through, to feel, to find the light. But I love it and I welcome it. I'm like, stretch me, bro. I'm like, like, actually, for everybody listening to this, we've been recording for 4.5 minutes. I'll be honest about this. I've spoken for 3.5, and in the 1 minute you've spoke, I almost need a dictionary for 3 of the words already. Right. And this is what I love about you so much. It's like, we'll have a conversation about like me being in my shadows or struggling with perspective, or just even some things. Right. And you'll share the most profound, and I mean the most profound, breakthroughs for me, but they won't land for like a week, because my little nerdy brain is like, I still don't know what those words mean. And then I like open up a dictionary and I close the loop on the words, and then your message hits my soul and I was like, holy moly. And then I have this new vocabulary to use. So I have to thank you for that one.
I love it. They're like time delay truth bombs that are seeded, and they just unlock and when the time is right.
Yeah, bro. You're like slow release. Like it's like perfect. Like you plant the seed and sow it so well, and you're like, oh yeah, yeah. Boom. And then I'm like, oh. And then I have your beautiful words to dance with, and I'm starting to collapse the gap of like using them in the right context and making sure I know what they mean. But I feel like you sharpen me so much with the things that are just naturally who you are.
Well, thank you. And you do the same for me with respect to grounding me in the reality, right? And it's like this beautiful, beautiful dance. And words are seeds, and they're constructs that birth worlds.
Yes.
Right? Like, and worlds and words, they're not that far apart phonetically as well. And, you know, in the beginning was the word, and the word was God. And, you know, here we are.
Like, even that, you're like, words are the construct that creates worlds. And I was like, I can chew on that for like the next 10 years. Like, there's like 700 keynotes underneath that fortune cookie and 800 questions that I just love. And I have a question now, actually, because I've never asked you this. So the Nikhil that I've known, my whole knowing of Nikhil has always been like a wordsmith, a word poet, right? But like, where did the, like that, even your proclivity to understand the power of words and know where they come from, right? Like, has that been here your whole life? Or is that something that you found as a byproduct of exploring for something? Or like, where did you get to the point? Like, you're so eloquent, but even that, like, where did that come from?
You know, that's a really great question, which I've never been asked before. And just reflecting back on my life, it's always been there in some capacity. And I could, I guess, connect it to maybe previous lives and being able to cultivate that. And like, for example, my sister, she is a brilliant, world-class author, writer. Like, her work, like, you think you need a dictionary for my words? I read my sister's writing and I'm like, I got no clue. what that word is, but it sounds beautiful and it fits in there so perfectly. So I guess it's just in the lineage in some capacity, and mm-hmm. it's how I connect with the world is through through exploring new perspectives through words that allow me to see new dimensions. And I guess like you, I just like to collect things and absorb information and knowledge, and a word comes into my reality and it sticks there. Mm. Like a seed.
Yes.
Maybe I'm just attracting seeds that are sprouting, and then I'm sowing them through sharing them with others and speaking them into existence. But yeah, no clear answer, but that's the answer I have for you right now, brother.
No, that's clear. I picked up a new word in Austin, insular. A new one I picked up, because someone, I did my two-word check-in, right? And yeah. At this event, I had like three first words in 8 years of me doing my own two-word check-in. And like, I was like, huh? And one of them was like insular. And I was like, that is such a good word. Like, it speaks so much. It's like, no, I'm here and I'm protecting myself, and I'm just choosing to see you from the inside out versus you seeing me from the outside in. And I was like, and then we talk so much about words and things like that. And then everybody called me out for the rest of the event because I used the word. I'm like, no, I pick them up quick. I pick them up quick. The only problem is when I pick them up with the wrong definition. Like when I picked up pontificate from Gary years ago when we were at an event together or something. And I think I used it in the wrong context for 2 years before somebody told me that. I was like, you know, that word doesn't mean what you think it means, right? And I was like, I've probably used that word 1,700 times and not one person has said anything to me. And so I love your breakdown of that. Now, do you like, you know, like you're so like your learning modalities, like how you consume, do you consume like words in general? Like, do you love looking at like what words mean and where they come from? Because you also like break down words so well. Is that something that came after, or is this something you pursue, like your vocabulary, because you write and you express yourself? Or is it like a byproduct of just using the muscle? And then over time, the more you use it, the more you dig into it.
I think it's a combination, because I do recollect many times when a word comes into my reality, I'll literally really quickly just boom definition. But that's all I need. It just, in that instance, it sits there.
Yeah.
And there's definitely times like that. And then there's some words that like, I'll maybe hear for the first time and I intuitively just know what it means, because it sounds like what it means, whereas some words don't, funnily enough. And I'm a massive fan of etymology and the exploration of the root, because this is unpacking creation.
Yeah. See, that's where I'm like, I'm trying to like find like, and for everybody listening, like Nikhil and I are like really incredibly close friends, and I've never asked him these in personal conversations. So I'm like, we might as well ask when we're on the podcast. Because I feel that now with you, right? Like I see you write, right? You write all the time, right? Like for me as a creator, like a creative, my preferred medium is video, right? I feel like I can express myself with no filter. I feel like it just allows me to be myself. But if you ask me to, like, for example, on the flight to Austin, I started writing a post, right? I saw a Facebook post and I was like, oh, I'm going to write a post about this. And I was like, oh. So then I have like an initial post that's like three sentences, right? And then I'm like, oh, but it could go there and it could go there. And then I have cliff notes below. And then I end up writing like 88 books and I try to put it all in one. And then I'm like, I'll sit there for 4 hours. But if you ask me to do it on video, I can do it in about 35 to 40 seconds. And so even this morning, I was looking at that. I was like, I was writing this for 5 days. And I was like, when am I going to post this? And then this morning I was like, screw it, just read it on video. And then I read it and it like filled in the gaps. But you know, for you, I watch you write, I watch you speak, I watch you do video. Do you have like, is there a modality that you prefer that helps you the most? Like, is it writing or is it speaking, or which one do you prefer?
You know, I enjoy both. And it's interesting because I feel like when I'm writing, it's almost like I'm reconstituting my mind, or, you know, defragging a hard drive in some capacity. And there's some real alchemy in that. And like, I've been missing writing over the last couple of months because I felt in some level creatively blocked with writing, which is an interesting thing. And Yeah, and I realize that when I'm not writing, I feel more tense and I harbor some resentment. And I'm like, but I don't know what to write about. And I know it's all part of my cyclical process of being a creative. And I love writing and I'm ready for more of it. And I'm also challenged at times in that process.
That tickled something in me too, because I just finished the event, and you know what, you and I were talking before mm-hmm. about the event, about like what it feels like for me. And for context for everybody here, we were at my event. I'm so present. Like my phone went off the day before the event and it didn't really get looked at again until I was flying home. But then in that, I felt naked at times, right? So present, but also part of me felt unexpressed. And I realized this morning, Nikhil, that the moment I recorded that video that I recorded this morning, it was like 2 minutes, right? It was a mm-hmm. quick Instagram story, Facebook, but I felt like alive again. And I was like, oh, there's clarity. And I was like, oh, actually, as a byproduct of my container as well, like my own creative process and outlet, like even though I'm speaking in front of them and I'm doing it, there's something between like me and my phone. When I record them, because before that I have pen to paper and I'm like, oh, here's my thought. Here's the word. Here's the blank. And so I actually feel that as well, like at a deep visceral level, because when I feel that block, typically it's like, oh, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. And then I'm like, well, this is something you could say. And I hit record and all of a sudden it's gone.
Yes.
And it's like the whole sky opens up.
And look, I feel the same way around video. And you're such a master of video. And I draw inspiration from you. And like when I do jump on video, like words just flow. Like words just flow automatically. And they don't need to be perfectly curated. Although even when I'm writing and when it's flowing, it feels like it's not really maybe it's my hand, but there's a presence that's inside of me that's just picking and choosing the next words. And it's like, it's a rhythmic expression rather than something that's like rational or linear.
Yeah. Oh God, I love that. And then didn't you say before we started too, like you're starting to make like writing blank pages or sheets a part of your day again?
Yeah. So some of you may know of morning pages, which is a really powerful process. It just looks like every morning as part of your ritual, you would just open up your journal and write 2 pages. Now, there's no, like, the intention behind the writing is just literally putting pen to paper. If you don't know what to write, you just say, I don't know what to write. But sooner rather than later, you realize that you're having a discourse with your deep subconscious. And like, and it's just like, ah, the valve is opened. And I've been doing that since India and it's been phenomenal.
I was going to say, oh, I have so many things, but I'm going to leave that one because I actually want to talk about India. I would love to talk about India because we've talked and I know where you were there, but can you give context for everybody kind of like why you were going to India?
Sure.
Where you're in India, and then you can go anywhere you want with that. But like, I'd love for everybody to kind of know because you were just there for a minute.
Yeah. And this homecoming, this pilgrimage, which I have been feeling into, like it's going to appear in my reality in the next few years. It just manifested so quickly. And my heritage is Indian. I was born in Bombay, which is now called Mumbai. And I was there for the first 5 years of my life. And then my family migrated to Perth, Western Australia. And that was a massive shift, as you could imagine. And, you know, I lived there till I was 21 and moved to Dubai and all of that. And I'd been back to India a few times, maybe 4 or 5 times in my life. And I've got dear, dear memories of not just being in Bombay, but also visiting Goa, which is where my mum's lineage is from. And Goa is a beautiful place. And I've got these pristine memories of my grandfather walking with me down the golden sand beach and just the beauty of it. And Goa has changed and India has changed. And I've only really been to Bombay or Goa. And what happened was in December, a friend of mine and a community member of Asraya, whom had connected to me very synchronistically early in January, she felt an intuitive hit to invite some leaders in a field to India for a pilgrimage / experimental experience, kind of anchored around Zach Bush visiting there as well, as they're connected and has been speaking at their hospital. And she just felt the intuitive hit. And I was like, you know what? It's about 4 weeks away. And yes, this feels right. And I just said instantaneous yes and made it a reality. And there was a schedule and an itinerary. Firstly, to be in Bombay for a few days and just kind of connect with community there and see the inner workings of the company that Krish's husband is the executive director of. And then we would go to a regenerative farm, which is owned by their family, about 2.5 hours out of Bombay in the hill country, which was phenomenal. Then staying at their family house up in the Western Ghats, which had views like Avatar, like truly, like I was like, whoa. By the way, that area, the valley in those mountains where the regenerative farm is the most biodiverse region in the world, like legitimately in India right there.
Oh, wow.
And that was like the first part of the trip. And I'll do the whole run through, and then we can tune into some of the pieces. And after that, we flew to Chennai, South India, to Tamil Nadu. And then we drove about 3.5 hours to an ashram over there. We were invited by an individual that's also cultivating community that had met my host and was bringing in leaders to experience this ashram. And that was a very, very deep and eye-opening experience around the polarity of religion and spirituality. And that's a whole deep dive right there. And after that, we went to Auroville, which is a... have you heard of Auroville, George?
Before? I haven't. No, I haven't. I've heard of the other places, but I haven't heard of Auroville.
Okay. So in 1968, like 120 delegates from different countries came with soil and put it into an urn to inaugurate this town, this area of land called Auroville, which was essentially mandated by the Indian government to be an experiment in elevating human consciousness and being a place with no religion and politics and money. And it was traced back. The creator was Sri Aurobindo. So Auroville comes from Aurobindo, who actually was the precursor to the free thought in India. Like Gandhi was one of his students, and he had been jailed for a year because he was speaking this phenomenal truths. And he had an ally called the Mother, who was a French Egyptian woman that, you know, co-inaugurated the place. So we were there learning around community building, and also a 53-year-old community, conscious community, that is now going through massive shifts and transformation with India wanting to take it back and all of that. So we were going there as also delegates to support and to learn around governance and community. And then after that, me and my partner went to Kerala, and we were stayed at this gorgeous, incredible, beautiful resort, the most stunning place I've ever been in my life, to integrate for a few days, and then back to Bombay to spend some family time because I still have family there. And I was there for my grandmother's 85th birthday. So that was how the journey ended. So high level, that was the experience.
I love it. Now I would love to know, like, what is your like most profound personal takeaway that you have like installed? And then like, what's one that you're unpacking that you're like dancing with?
So the most profound personal takeaway was how important it was to reconnect to my mother, the motherland. And to give context, as a Indian boy, 5 years old, whom also didn't feel Indian because his mother was Goan Catholic who only spoke English, and not really feeling Hindu because my dad never really practiced, then going to Australia and being different and then adjusting to that culture and almost severing my connection to my Indianhood and almost seeing it as less than, like how connecting there is bringing back this part of me that I've just felt so, it's just been lost somewhere, and how much it's been so alive to feel that. Mm-hmm. And what's emerging from that is home. I feel home in India. I'm going to live there for half the year now and kind of do this dance, and the people and the spiritual tradition that's alive there, it just cracked me open.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. No, I can feel that, dude. I don't know if you saw, but we had an incredible guest on the podcast, and She's 15 in India.
Okay.
And she hasn't been on the podcast. She's come, I will have her on the show, but we ended up on a call and she's been with me on Instagram for a few years and I didn't even put two and two together and she ends up my calendar and I end up like crying for 30 minutes on a call with her, like thanking her, like for inspiring me, for being like 14 years old, 15 years old, email marketing from India, focusing on relationships and copy the conscious way and caring about people, but like embodying that whole culture. Like I got on a call and all I just felt was love, like this 15-year-old incredibly like vibrant, radiant life giver working all the way from over here in our world and like ending up together. And I was like, I have so much I get to learn, like so much I get to learn. I was like, I think I started that at 37, right? So yeah, like even culturally when you speak about that, like I felt it. And then her and I cried at the end of the call because we were talking about God and spirituality and connectedness and that feeling of home and the feeling of how it feels to be there and giving people that feeling on the internet. And like the like culturally, like that feeling is my goal to bring on the internet for everybody.
Wow. I love that. Like in, my partner Aurora made an observation around, you know, there's chaos in India, right?
Yeah,
like there's,
yeah.
You know, things, there's, you know, dirt and traffic and chaos. But amidst all of that, there's so much beauty, like this village woman wearing these beautiful saris with like these rich colors and they're so put together. The traffic, people are honking, but it's like a symphony of honking because they're letting each other know that they're flowing together. And it's this contrast of like light and darkness that just feels so true. And nothing is hidden. It's, mm-hmm. it's in plain sight. And that's really refreshing coming from a Western perspective where things are really sterile and somewhat, you know, it's a different experience altogether. So yeah.
Well, dude, do you remember when I came back from Bali in September, we had talked and I was describing it. I was like, dude, it's like spiritual Manhattan.
Yeah.
It is the most beautiful juxtapositioned image or scene or scenario that I've ever been into. And I can only explain it of like, you have traffic everywhere, roads that aren't big enough, people honking, people doing whatever. And then throughout the day, in that culture, watching them respect their values and know who they are, be connected, stay in their prayer. But yet they'll be praying and in ceremony and there'll be 80 tourists from Australia and other countries walking around, snapping photos, walking in between. But like it doesn't affect them or bother them. And it's just these multiple things all happening at the same time. And then it reminds me of like when I was, dude, I actually don't think I've ever talked about this on the podcast, but when I deployed to Somalia, I was 19 years old. Right. Like I came from what everybody knows I came from. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, boom, deployed 19 years old into, you know, one of the most war torn parts of the world, countries, all of it. But like, I'll never forget of like being there, deployed there is what I would consider darkness. Right. It's not like a good thing. And boom. But then like be out on mission and 12 miles out in the middle of nowhere and meet a little kid who's hawking gum on the side of the road with no shoes, who's never even seen ice in their life. Like never even seen ice. Didn't even know ice existed. Didn't know what half the stuff we had was. But then in that moment, nothing but beauty and love and simplicity and connection. And like, I feel like people ask me all the time, like, why I do what I do. And I'm like, when you see that at 19, it might take 20 years to land. But when it lands, it lands. And like that feeling you're talking about, that contrast, like that gave me goosebumps like all the way to my core, because like I remember those moments and I remember how grateful they were for like the smallest of things that I take for granted every day and that I forget about, but how no matter what happened externally, the happiest, most loving, connected in every situation, like all the time. And it's like, it almost broke me as a kid. Like, and you stack that on top of like, I tell people deployments like going into a coma you didn't sign up for. Because for me, my life went on every day when I was deployed, but I checked boxes, I did blank, but I lived in such an isolated container. And then you come home after 13 months and you realize there's people that you knew who didn't know each other that now have a 3-month-old child, and that all happened when you were gone. And then you're like, oh my God, it's so good to see you. And you do dinner, right? And then you do your dinner. And then their whole life goes on. They're like, oh, it's so good to see George after being deployed. And they go do dinner. And then my whole world collapsed. I'm like, I missed an entire 13 months of like that. And then like that, I sat in that shadow for probably like 8 years. That was probably the biggest struggle of like my quote unquote PTSD. Wasn't any of that stuff or any of the stuff I saw. It was like collapsing the gift of humanity and presence and seeing such beautiful things in some of the darkest parts of the world. But then while experiencing those things, realizing that it feels like everybody knows you're gone and everybody knows you're gone, but then they still have their life and moments too. And then like you come back and I'm like, I don't even know what to liken it to. I'm like, I don't know, like a coma on a spaceship with Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence when they wake each other up. Like, I don't know, like one of those things. But then it's always led to the most beautiful place because all I remember is those smiles of those kids. Like, I remember buying gum off one of them, and it's a group of four-year-olds who have an eight-year-old as a parent, and they're hawking gum. And I'm like, but the conversations, and I found photos of them the other day when I was moving offices, and I walked through every one of them, and I remember every one of them. And it's like that moment that you just referenced. That when you said that, that's what happened in my body, all of it, like every thought, every memory, every kid, Eritrea, Ethiopia, Sudan, Zambia, Tanzania, Kenya, like everywhere I went, I'm like that. And I think it's one of the most beautiful gifts that's almost unexplainable to people when you can feel that and see that and then be witness to that. So I don't know if that went anywhere, but I just felt called to share that.
Thank you for sharing that. And what immediately comes up for me is like how we can be caught up in our own, you know, perspective of reality, in our ivory tower, in our silos in some way, and really recognizing that there are billions and billions and billions of beings out there that are having their own unique experience that can relatively appear, you know, worse, and at times, you know, practically it's worse than what a lot of people have in the world. But acknowledging that life is alive in those spaces, there is still joy, there's still sadness. It's a relative experience. And it's like, how do we even comprehend the depth and gravity and magnitude of that? It's profound.
That is what, like, it's just like it's a shadow collapsing moment to bring presence. Mm. It's just like, I just had Mike Rubin on the show before you. Today, an incredible entrepreneur, and he said something so easy. He's like, the only reason I don't fail is because I already know what mistakes not to make. Right? And he's like, it's really a series of just make them all until you know what flavor they are, and eventually you run out of mistakes to make, and it delineates your choices down, and that's what success looks like. And I was like, bro, like, I'm totally in. And I feel like my trap for so long was getting trapped in the reflections of the moments and not remembering how precious they are and how quickly they're fleeting. And it's like those moments are the ones that I remember that bring perspective, but also collapse or suck the oxygen out of mine of like, oh yeah, it's so hard today. Right. And it's boom, boom, boom. And it's not that I don't know, or it's my body doesn't remember. Like, I'm emotional that day. I'm tired. I'm blank. I can't remember when my first client left, but it's like these moments. I constantly look for these fortune cookies to suck the oxygen out of all my excuses. So like they can just pop up or be around me at the right moment so I can have that. And it's something it took me years to reconcile. Like, I never understood the value of those deployments. Like, I never understood the value of those moments or like how those 13 years shaped me to be the man I am. And so many people give credit to the Marine. It's not the Marine. It's that I became one and what I got to experience and witness because of it. And then those moments, like, it's those little moments that I always think of, like when it's like the lowest of the low and I'm like, oh God, like that kid, I remember that kid, and his whole mission was to get gum that day so he could have water. And we gave him water and we played with him for a while. And then he just went on until the next moment, but nothing else mattered. Nothing else existed. Like, it was a true, like, moment to moment. And it also hurts my heart to know why moments matter so much, because life is so not guaranteed for them.
Yeah.
Right. And it's feel like the trap that I've fallen into is thinking that it is for me. But because I have walls around me and a car in the driveway, and like that doesn't change if I drive up the street and an elk jumps in front of me today and Georgie's no more. Mm-hmm. Right. And I feel like those moments, like that perspective creates this beautiful dance, as you would put it, where it's like every time I dance with the light, I know I'm also dancing with the darkness. And it's just the willingness to do the dance. And if I step on toes or my own, remove them and keep leading, but don't stop dancing. Because I had this explained and someone asked at the event, and I didn't do this explanation. Somebody else did, like, how do you eradicate, you know, darkness? And they were like, well, just imagine a cup of water, right? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, if I take that water and then I put sand in the water and the sand drops to the bottom, I can pour as much fresh water in there, a bucket at a time, cup at a time. That water will stay dirty. The only way that that dirt gets out of that water is if I keep pouring in a consistent stream of fresh water, and eventually all that dirt will work its way out. But the moment I stop, it settles right back down to the bottom. And I feel like it's this constant dance of, like, pouring the water in to get it out. Oh, is this perspective right? Is it not? Am I doubting it? And then the water starts pouring and then this one catches up. I'm like, no, pour. And so it's all these, like, perspective shifting moments to allow myself at least to keep pouring into the water, to pour into the bucket, to pour in from a place of love, to pour in from a place of presence, from a place of gratitude, knowing that the only darkness or dirt that I get to get out of my cup is my own dirt that gets in the way of me pouring water into other people's cups, right? But it's all that perspective. That all happened in my head when you said that story.
Wow. I love that. And what immediately comes up for me is when we were, you know, in South India, and in this, it was this golden temple. It was literally a golden temple with a macabre star path around it. And the puja, so the puja is the ritual ceremonies that were taking place, just this devotion, these prayers, these chantings, the abhishekam, the pouring of the, like, milk over a statue of the goddess, and this cleansing, this ritualistic cleansing of a symbol, which is actually reflective of the cleansing and purification of your own soul, right? And I think this is what we're speaking to here. It's like being in devotion and offering, and this darkness is there, but you're honoring it and you're releasing it and you're cleansing it and you're being in this cycle. It's a dance. It's the cycle and the rhythm that actually gives birth to creation, right? And we can't have the life without the death, the light without the dark, the male without the female. They're on a spectrum together. And I think when we're cognizant of that and we're in the flow of that, it becomes art. It becomes presence. Otherwise, it becomes something that we're trying to analyze or judge or compartmentalize inside of a box. And that is the antithesis of what life really is.
Well, then, and I love this, and boy, do I have a question now. So in that same lens of, like, it's art when we paint, and then knowing you and your creative process, where's there a finish line to where the canvas goes from behind the closed door into the world? Like, where's that line? Because, like, I agree with you, and I feel like what I've relegated myself to is that I don't have walls in the studio anymore. I just paint in front of you. Because I feel like I've always struggled with that, like, in what you're saying, oh, I'm going to create this thing, I'm going to have that thing. But then that analyzation dance happens, right? And is the whole word. And even the post I referenced earlier, I'm like, oh, there's more. And what's so crazy is I wrote that post on last Tuesday, and I wrote it to post Wednesday, and then it ended up getting posted today because I sat on it and kept moving the starting line and moving. And then it turned into something beautiful today, but I didn't choose to put it off. The container I dropped into kind of pulled me out of it. And so what is your dance like with the creative process?
Such a great question. Like, I see, like, these creative acts, these seeds that emerge into, you know, ideas, projects, paintings, songs, posts, writings, whatever it might be, like, they have a life of their own, right? So there's some creations that just desire to emerge into the world as they're being birthed, which is so beautiful and so natural. And then there's some creation that almost, like,
needs to hibernate or incubate in some capacity under the soil. Like it's there, like it's taking its time and it's ready to birth. And I guess it's knowing that when it's time to birth that versus that point where it can start to rot and become entropic as well. So there's no linearity to it.
Mm. I think that's the answer is it's I guess it's like having a garden, right? Like only you can look at the garden and know what needs water, what needs pruning, and then what gets to go in. And then that leads me to another question though, is so then for you and your process, like how have you learned? Like I feel like I make up stories about you and your process because I know you so well, mm-hmm. but also your brain. And I make up that with the paradox of knowing that you have, like the paradox of knowledge, like the depth of knowledge, the depth of understanding, right? Like you and I can have intelligent questions for you in probably 12 buckets of expertise that I listen and take notes from. And I'm like, yeah, Nikhil, preach, bro. Take me to church, right? And so how do you develop, or how have you personally seen like your relationship with that from a lens of like self-trust and knowing all of that work and all of those pieces? Like how do you reconcile the depth of what you know and how much you know versus how much to put on the plate or when to put on the plate?
Oh, what a powerful question. I reconcile it with challenge. It feels challenging at times when there's this creative tension of a birthing of a world, because your creativity, my creativity, it is a world in itself. And the resistance that can arise when that part of me that wants it to be out into the world and be in the place and doing the thing, but an inner knowing that it's not the time just yet. Trust, surrender to the seasons. I'm still learning how to reconcile that because it's an emergent process.
Well, I feel like too, though, what I notice so well is that, because like we talk quite often, but the first thought that came to my head was like for me, because I asked that question selfishly, but then I heard my answer in your answer. And I was like, oh, well, no, the only way to develop that trust is to actually create more art. Right. It's actually just to create more art, because like one of the things that I genuinely admire about you and I feel like where you keep me sharp is to the commitment to your practices. Right. Like even if they bow and change, like you're the guy, like I've never known you to check a box of like, oh, I did my morning routine. Right. Like you embody it, you feel it, but you also flow with the season of them changing. But it sounds like that whenever you're the season may change and the garden's in a different season, you're like, okay, cool. Well, now I get to start planting in this season, but you always start with you and your practice, and you always protect the art. Even if the medium changes, or even if the paint strokes change, you find a new way to like whip out the pages again and do your two pages in the morning, or I'm going to go do this. Right. So like, what's your relationship like with, like you were talking about in India, you know, their devotion and their practices. And you're someone I feel like just as a human, but even in our worlds together, and as Raya and where I know you in the world, right? Like you are meticulous from the outside in with the integrity and the discipline around the outcome of your practice, not the practice itself. And so does that feel like it plays a big role for you? Or like, what's your relationship like with your practices or even your relationship with yourself before you go create?
That's such an incredible question. What it feels like is that my core perspective is that this life, how I'm living my life, it is the brushstrokes on the canvas of creation, right? And the texture and the depth, which is possible because it's a shadow, allows me to actually flow with how life wants to express in real time. And when I am priming myself, i.e. giving me the core foundational things that I need to feel safe enough to create and express myself, i.e. you know, sleep, phenomenal nutrition, and being in dialogue with creation, for me, that is foundational to trust that the creativity that emerges in that day is what desires to create. Because some days I don't feel creative, but I'm always creating. Mm-hmm. You're always creating. Like it doesn't stop. We are creation mm-hmm. in motion, right? So it's like I'm learning more how to attune to my own cycles where I feel more, sometimes more productive. There's greater output. And where there's sometimes it's like, there's not much output, but there's such a deep churning and creative integration that's taking place and feeling okay with that, feeling good with that. That's where I'm dancing with.
I think that's the secret. Yeah. I love that. Like your answers just tickle me. I'm like, yep, that's what I do. I'm like, yep. Okay. Yep. I feel that too. I think the thing that you said too, the two things that I want to highlight that really particularly tickled for me are we're constantly creating, even if it doesn't look like we are mm-hmm. 100% of the time. And then the second part is you get to be okay with whatever that painting looks like.
Yeah.
And it always reminds me because like I look at artists who actually paint, right? And I'm blessed to be, God has just surrounded me with some of the most incredibly talented people. And I've watched a few of them paint. And I was like, why is that thing like that? They're like, oh, that's just the base. I'm like, what? And I'm like, your painting has like 800 layers of paint on it. They're like, bro, what do you think? It looks like that when we start? I'm like, that's what I thought. I thought you just started painting and you made it look like that thing that somebody pays money for. And I was like, wait, you just painted that whole canvas black? And he's like, yeah, I'm probably going to go over it like 20 more times and figure out the back color. And then it's like layer upon layer. And yes. I was like, my mind broke. Like it broke because it broke my linear understanding of like what it takes to make art. Or the first time I saw a friend make a song and my whole career because of my own wounds was I'm a one and done, I have to do it perfect, right? It's boom, it's boom, it's boom. And like even this season, oh, we out here now. This season, I now watch every one of my own videos before I post it. And this is within the last 6 months. And nobody knows why I never used to watch my own content. And everyone's like, I'm like, oh, I don't watch it, I don't watch it. And they're all they just assume, they just make up. Oh, it's because he just wants to keep creating. No, I was scared to watch my own content. It made my body shiver. Like I would get nauseous. I would get self-conscious. I would get massively, massively self-aware and self-deprecating before I watched it. And like I'd start to hear my voice and my voice would shift. And I'd be like, what the? And I couldn't watch it. And you know, my personal life and what's been going on. And about a year ago when things started to really, really come into play, but even a lot of what you're sharing, where I like spent that time to know who I am and made whatever I created okay. What it really gave me was a permission slip to just speak authentically, not this is one piece of content or this is here. I have to get it all in one. And without even realizing it, I would record a piece of content. And then one day I noticed I was watching everything I recorded. And I was like, huh, no, do it again. No, that didn't feel right to you. I'm like, if you didn't feel that, they're not going to feel it. And it took me a couple months to realize that I'd like shifted through. And the answer for me was like really like radical self-love. But it drastically, drastically changed my process and the results that I create and my ability to look at my art and know like when I dance and don't dance. And it's new for me. Like it's really, really, even Ashley's like, do you know how much easier it is to do your content now? I'm like, well, yeah, because like I record it and I didn't like it. So I redid it and I can tell you what's in it. I was like, yeah, because it's like I'm giving the time and care to my art that it always deserved that I couldn't give it before because I made myself unworthy as an artist over and over and over again, right? And I was so attached to that like, it's got to be one and done that I wouldn't even look. And so it's like, I would paint a painting and then I'd be like, here it goes. I'm never looking at it again. Nope. Don't even want to see it. Don't know I made it. I don't want to know. And I was like, I've yet to meet a photographer who puts photos on the wall that doesn't like their own photos or, you know, a painter who ends their own painting in their house. And I was like, oh, and so I just had to really start noticing and collapsing down that like, this is my art. Right? Like when I make a video, it's my art. When I write words, it's my art. And in that, it's okay to post it if that's what I feel like is the expression of my art that day. But I think I should look at my own art if I'm really, really proud of it before I share it with the world, or else it's never going to land with the world.
Well, your art is literally a reflection of you, mm-hmm. right? So we're willing to look at ourselves and love ourselves and all of it, and sometimes make changes, sometimes adapt.
Well, like I got, and I love them. I love them to pieces. But I was doing content, and I recorded a video, and someone sent me a message, and they're like, I can't watch this. I can't even listen to you. I'm just telling you because you remind me of this woman that used to like reading rainbow shows. And I was like really like triggered for a minute. I'm like, they caught me in a down moment. And I responded. I'm like, and they were like, you can give me feedback on this. And I was like, well, right. And I did that. And then she's like, whoa. And then I was like, I'm so sorry. I don't know what's going on. Blah, blah, blah. And then we talked through it. And then I watched the video and I was like, oh, I felt that way too. And then I was like, well, now I have a Halloween costume for this year because I'm going to dress up as said character. But then I like had a good chuckle and I was like, God, thanks for the feedback. Like, thank you for telling me that I put a giant black stroke across the most beautiful part of my painting. I didn't realize that I accidentally spilled that paint on the way out the door. Thanks for telling me before I hang it up on the wall. And I was like, and it's just like these like little reframes. And I've even like reframed them. Like when I get feedback, they're just protecting my art. Mm-hmm. It's all they're doing. The world's mm-hmm. just telling me that I missed a spot on my painting. Yes. And I'm like, well, great. I'm not going to miss it next time. I'll put it back up. Let's go.
And see, your art, all of your art, contributes to the grand masterpiece that life is creating together, right? So it's like this, it's growing and synergizing and evolving together. And we will get that feedback. And it's beautiful. Like that's part of being an artist, dancing and feeling how the currents of life are moving us to more deeply express ourselves. Because the art, whether it's a video or a painting or a book, whatever it might be, that's a living, breathing organism. And the people receiving it are also living and breathing. And they're also the same being, right? Yes. It's all one interconnected thing.
And since this is George's couch of like divulging all of his shadows that come up with his brother Nikhil, because I forgot we were recording like 10 minutes ago. And I'm like, this is what like me and Nikhil talk about. Like this was the before combo too. I also realized, Nikhil, I was never taught a relationship with progress. Mm-hmm. I was only taught a relationship with rigidity because of mm-hmm. my life and my childhood. Right. And so that trauma response of like survival was mm-hmm. every decision had safety on the other side of it, right? That was it. It was like, am I going to have a bed tonight or not? Am I going to have food tonight or not? Like this one decision I make is the decision that might be there. And then I didn't account that I went in the Marine Corps on top of it. But one dirty little shadow I have that I've always been jealous of is like when I watch people like make outlines for a presentation, then come back to it, or they'll write down 20 words and be like, I'm going to come back to this. And like, I'm going to break down in tears right now. I didn't even know how to do that until a year ago. And everyone's like, why are you so obsessed as a consultant? Like, why do you learn all these things and teach them to you? Well, I got to teach myself some way. And so like most of my consulting came from me, like literally being jealous of everybody. And I'm like, how do they do this? Like, why does their brain work like this? Like, why can they go write 5 pages and make progress on their book? And I feel like I can't write one unless I write the whole book in one day. Like this shadow, I've never talked about this ever. It was a prison, bro. And it was like sneaky, because it's so easy to justify when I'm like, oh, Nikhil needs it right now. No, I'll go, right? And it can get so justified. And I'm like, what am I missing? And I just figured out that I was never taught like how to think and work in process. I was most of my life was conditioned to be in fight or flight. And so I'm like, no, you can't run more than one race at a time. What do you mean? And they're like, bro, there's mile markers, right? Like you can take a break, right? Like, you know, like when they give us a photo project, they give us 12 months to take all those photos. And I'm like, what do you mean? We can be done today. Like, why not just be done today, right? And there's this fear built into the finish line. Like, if I didn't finish, I was unsafe. If it wasn't complete, I was unsafe. And so even this conversation is very, very fucking therapeutic for me. Because I also am, like, best friends with you and I watch you in your process. And in that, I miss those moments because for me, the feeling, and I'm sharing this in case this lands or resonates with anybody, but most of the time, like when we're on this podcast and I get a text, my first body's response is that has to be done in the next minute.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's the default muscle that's installed. And over time I've learned to like work and like outcomes and protect my space, but it's all that same, the one and done, the one and done. And the worst part about that trauma is that it has the built-in trap of there's a finish line at every single decision, which is not true in any way, shape, or form. And so the game was completely unwinnable. And earlier when I asked you, you're like, I'm still integrating this. I'm like, hi, my name's George. This one is the sneakiest, slipperiest one, but that's the one that I've been unpacking and like really reflected on, because now it's like, I have notes in my notebook and I like, it's going to be weird, but I look down, I'm like, oh, look at those things. I'm like halfway done with that thing and I'm excited to come back to it. And it's like the baby steps about it, but it's helping me learn my relationship with my art. And I'm like, you know what? That canvas looks really good right there. I don't have anything to add to it right now. I'm going to go start a new one. And if I decide to come back to this one, I'll come back to this one. But it's like, it's visceral in my body. It's still visceral in my body sometimes.
Thank you for the honor of witnessing you in the in the illumination of that shadow, right? It's, I'm sure, like, I mean, I relate the trauma, the survival, the way that we are primed to act and react in the world, and how life is really beckoning us to play, to be a muse for us, to dance with and create and tend to the garden of creation, and knowing the nuance of each piece of art and trusting it. And that is the invitation, brother. And you are a phenomenal artist and teacher, and it's beautiful, beautiful to witness you.
Oh my God, brother. I feel the same about you, and I'm still learning every day how to paint like you paint, because your paint colors, bro, like they got glitter and unicorns fucking streaked across your canvas somehow. Like you paint a brushstroke and a unicorn rides across it when you're done. And I'm like, that's because my vocabulary is not really caught up, but then it's the embodying. And that's the other thing too. It's not the words you use. Fuck it. I haven't said this. I'm going to say this right now. It's that every word you use, you are fully embodied underneath every one of them. Like when you use a word and learn a word, like I feel like you don't use it until it's who you are or the state of being you're operating from. And so it's like your dictionary only works when it's installed into you. But that's not normal. Because like you say words and I only know what they mean because of how you're being with them. And like that muscle, we can bottle that muscle up or figure out that level of integration and muscle. Like that's the one that I see in you the most. And I'm like, no, bro, like it's not that you use the word loquacious, if that's even a word. I don't know. I might have made that up. But it's like when you use it, like I feel the feeling of the word. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. And it brings up one very, very important piece, I think, that we look at right now. How you're feeling in any given moment directly translates into art, right? Whether it's a painting that, you know, that's infused with anger and rage or ecstasy, or a story that gives a deep sense or a window into your soul. How you're feeling when you're connected to your medium, that's what gets translated through. And I guess whatever gift that I have been given to translate how I'm feeling into words, that's something that is, it's been given by grace. And because I'm just being congruent with my expression, because I feel safe to authentically express myself with you, I just happen to have collected some words and some seeds on my journey, being a journeyman through this life that gets to be expressed in this living, breathing art. That's this conversation.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's so funny, that Facebook post that I just told you about, right? Yeah. The whole reason I wrote it is because I don't think most people realize that they're creating art in every moment based on how they feel. And I was scrolling through Facebook and I saw this incredible post from a woman about her coaching program and how gratitude matters and loving your clients. And I was like, I am in. I was like, comment. I don't even know her. We're just friends on Facebook. And then the Facebook magical algorithm happened. And then it showed me a post from 3 days earlier and a post from like 7 days later in the next half an hour, right? And one of them was complaining and gaslighting a client 3 days before that post came. And then like 6 days later, it was complaining about something in the world and it hurt my heart because it break checked me instantly. And I was like, oh, this woman's not trying to do this. Like, she genuinely believes in her message, but the half-life of one social post is like 30 seconds right now. And we think in this isolated container, but if we were to take 30 of those posts in a row and put them on a table in front of us, would they match? Would they be consistent? Would they be congruent? Maybe not in what's on the canvas, but the artist itself, right? And it just led me down this really deep rabbit hole about the power of our words and how what you just said about like we're constantly creating art, on how many times I didn't recognize I was, and I was still putting brushstrokes on the canvas and they were fighting against the art that I was trying to sell in the gallery. Because I was measuring in a window that was too small and I wasn't taking into account relationships and art and journey and knowing that we're going to have emotional moments and we're going to have those things, but it's also when we have them, how we choose to put them on canvas that either supports our art and our career or hinders it and turns people off of our art because they got a window into the process that happens behind the canvas that they don't always see because it leaked out. And so it's like this big thing on consistency and congruency. And so that's what started as three words and then ended up as like 6,000 offshoots about like conditioning and behaviors and the spiral effect. And like, I watched a video yesterday and you know, I go to church every morning. I watch my pastors every morning, my relationship with God. And he was talking about how frustrated he got because one of his best friends was an atheist. And he's like, he asked me about Easter. And so I was just sharing from my heart. And I invited him and he was like, just shutting me down. I didn't even know why I asked. Like, this frustrated me for 4 years. 4 years it drove me nuts because I'm like, why did he ask? And he's like, and it wasn't till 4 years later I figured it out, because I got off stage and I was coming up and a family came up to me and a gentleman said, do you have a minute? And he's like, of course I do. And he's like, I need to tell you something. He said, 4 years ago I saw you in a coffee shop and I was cleaning the bathroom right outside where you were having the conversation because I worked at that coffee shop and you were talking to one of your friends and your friends had asked you about Easter, like he was open. And then every time you gave him an answer, he shut you down and shut you down and shut you down. And he's like, I heard you and I grabbed my family that next day and we came to your church that Sunday. And we've been members since and our life is so great. And I know it took me a long time, but I just want to say thank you for saying that to your friend. And like, we forget about those moments. Like, we forget that every time we put a piece of art into the world, it's leaving an impression, whether intentional or unintentional. And there's this like level of relationship that I have with my words now, or like what I say and how I say it, because I think about that. And I think all too often or forever, I just forgot that I was putting brushstrokes on the canvas, whether I was intending to or not, or whether I was thinking about it or not, based on how I felt and the words that I was using to express that. And the world sees that art every single day. My kids see it. My ex-wife sees it. You see it. I put it in videos. I put it in all of it. And I just think about the fleeting moments where a temporary feeling allowed me to change the brushstroke of my hand or change the color I put on. And then because I didn't look at that art, or because I wouldn't sit in that video. And by the way, the reason I couldn't watch the videos is because they'd make me nauseous because I was out of alignment somewhere. And I know what it was. I was giving everybody advice that I was too afraid to take for myself. So I was hiding in Solomon's paradox, right? I just didn't recognize it. And I also learn through teaching. And so that trap was there. But that's what inspired that post, was like even thinking about all the pieces that you just shared was just even forgetting about the power that art has, even if you hung it in a coffee shop 20 years ago and somebody comes and buys a coffee today, that art still matters and still leaves a moment and still leaves a memory. And so like there's this part that like I think about now where there's like this, it's like I owe my art me to think about it like this way so that it can be art and it's not destructive in the process.
And can we have heart without art? The art's in the heart, right? And when our heart is open, then we experience life as art and creativity. And that's the etymological thread right there.
Your epistemological, whatever that word is. I can't ever say it in that context. I can say it the regular way. I can't say it. Can you say that again?
The etymological.
Etymological. There we go. Etymological. Yeah. Okay. Yes. We're good now. We out here now, as Kevin Hart would say. We out here now. I love how you get me to do, Nikhil. Like, we're on this podcast. My chair is turned sideways and I don't have any arms on this chair. And I've like done a 180 over here with you. And I'm like sitting Indian style now with my back. I'm like, no, I love this. This is amazing. I love you, brother.
Love you too. You're in your avatar lotus form.
I am.
Right
I am.
There.
I am.
Dancing in the paradox, brother. And, you know, here we are.
Though I want to close the loop on one thing I asked you earlier, because I asked what your biggest takeaway was from India, and then the one that you're currently like in process with, whether for you or in business or anything, but I would kind of love to hear like what you're working on or in or integrating, like just,
The one that I'm integrating is the, like how we globally interconnect and weave together in more meaningful ways. There was deep conversation around, you know, interdependent systems, planetary regeneration, the soil, like how can we open source? So something unlocked there physically being in India that I've taken with me as a deeper contemplation around, okay, if we are really doing this here on this planet as heart-centered human leaders, if we are truly bridging heaven and earth into a more whole now, it looks like really deep, dynamic collaboration, you know, and coherence. And yeah, a lot has opened up with that. And I'm kind of sitting with that. Like, how do we do this better? How do we take this seriously while still having fun and weaving as a global body? That's what's alive for me.
I love that. Well, actually, because we do have to land this at some point or else we'll do this for 12 hours, but we'll do another one sooner than later. But we've mentioned Asraya a few times and we mentioned the beginning and we talk about community. And in my opinion, you are one of the greatest at thinking about community, creating them, creating that shared experience. And the most important part for me is having it be around something centrally located or shared and not around you or the creator. Like, you genuinely create supportive communities. So can you give everybody just a quick overview of like what we do in Asraya, just so everybody has an awareness? Because I say it all the time, but I've never like explained it. And I'm like, well, I should talk to the guy, you know, who founded it with my best friends and have him explain it because he's here. And so if you want to explain to everybody what it is, so everybody knows what we're talking about.
Yeah, of course. And look, at the core, Asraya, it's a Sanskrit word that means refuge, shelter, base. So beyond anything, that's what it is. It's a safe space for the weird, wonderful, heart-centered entrepreneurs, visionaries, creators to gather and dream together a new world. So that's really what Asraya is. And it's definitely in an emergent process. We're experimenting. We're learning what it takes to align busy, creative, dynamic beings around a shared vision and to actually do it whilst also picking up the insights and learning, you know? So there's that component to it being, as I'm seeing it, like an R&D lab for human consciousness and community building. But in a very tangible sense, it is a platform and a community of, you know, leaders, visionaries, change makers coming together to learn, to create, to unite and to thrive and to embark on a quest together. That's really what it's about. And there's just phenomenal people in the space. We get to learn and grow from each other. And the vision is to build the tangible infrastructure and protocol that can support not just Asriya, but all the other ecosystems and communities that are on the same path to come together and to truly elevate. And it's a big, ambitious, audacious vision, but it came from a deeper part of my being, from a higher plane. And that's the art that's kind of weaving through me right now. And George was our second founding citizen.
That's because my buddy up the street beat me by like 30 seconds. I mean, and I love him, but he gets to be first. But he texted me and I was so mad.
Well, I'm glad that you're both here. And look, you're all, with Asriya, each being is a seed that turns into a plant, a fruit-bearing tree in the larger ecosystem of a garden that we get to create together, and we get to taste each other's fruit, and we get to share our energy through the mycelium layer. Really, that's what Asriya is. We're not trying to create anything from scratch. We're replicating and flowing with nature and creation, because for me, that feels the most congruent way to be in the world.
Oh, bro, I love watching you create. Like, I feel like if I had a dream, I could just take a fly on the wall seat. If I could get paid to just watch you build and be your hype man, like, I'm in. I'll throw some questions out to get you grounded, but then I'll just help you paint with the world, bro. I'm in.
Let's do that, brother. I mean, I could, yeah, like, you catalyze me in a way that not many people can. And thank you for seeing me and for being an ally on this journey, brother. It's a gift beyond words.
Brother, I will tell you, one of my greatest gifts in my life is you. Like, the messages that you send me, though, I have more of your videos and messages saved in my rainy day folder on my phone, I think, than anybody. And I'm like, and it's not even when you intend to. It's just you're thinking of me and just dropping this like poetic song that needs 8 billion streams on Spotify the moment you release it to me. And then I'm like, this is my moment, but I want to tell like 1,000 people about this moment. No, I'm just going to soak all this in. Jesus, what are you doing to my nervous system, Nikhil? I'm like, thanks for teaching me how to receive. Like, holy moly. And like, I love when you check me, when I'm like, oh, you're so, and you're like, you're just a PO. I'm like, no, I'm not. And then I send you back the video and I watch it. I'm like, wow. Wow, maybe I am. And like, I just love how embodied you are in everything, that like your presence lovingly calls me up to a greater presence of my own. Mm. Like, that's what it feels like to be your friend, bro. Like, just your existence sharpens me, but it feels like Mother Ayahuasca or God is carrying me on a fluffy pillow, no matter how loud it is when you say things. They bypass every filter and just get installed straight on the heart with no other things that get in the way. That's what it feels like when I receive your messages, bro.
Thank you, brother. And I feel exactly the same. So whatever is happening here, I'm so fucking grateful for it, because it's a gift beyond words.
Well,
you're a gift.
But brother, I feel the same. And I'll tie it in for everybody too, because if you're listening to this, then the episode with Mike Rubin was already up. And the thing, and Mike is a savage. Like, I think his fund, North Pond Ventures, I think they're a $60 billion fund. And I asked him about the secret to relationships. And he's like, it's really, really easy. There's two buckets. Bucket number one is the critical few. And bucket number two is to be of use to everybody else. And I was like, huh? And then he started breaking it down. And the critical few are the yous of the world and the me's of the world, the ones that we should be getting feedback from. And he said, think about the amount of times you post on social, but you never get enough likes. But if you open that post, all your critical few liked it. So who are you looking for feedback from? Because if my kids and my friends, like you, if I put something on social and I see that you liked it, I'm done. I don't have anything else to prove. That's one of my critical few. Everyone else will come around, whatever. And he's like, but you got to pour into the relationships and into the critical few that don't only support you, but just their presence brings the most out of you in your business, in your family, in your relationships. And surround yourself with those. Take feedback from those. Like, if you want to call somebody, call them. I just avoided it for so long because my body wasn't ready to hear what you had to say, because I had to let it in. I got to let it in, and our relationship developed over the years and then instantly went to level 10,000 of depth and hasn't left since. And so I think it's so profound, and I think it really just boils down to what we talked about. It's like finding the present moment to choose where to spend your time. And then when you're choosing to spend it, are you spending it in a way that's serving you? Is it serving your art? Is it making you a better artist or more excited to paint in your way, whether it's a podcast, written word, anything else? Or it could be in your business or how you lead your team or what things you share with them. Like, art is so subjective and so many ways in which we can express it and share it. But our job in this world, our job on the planet is to, in my opinion, is to paint with the paints that we've been given on the canvas that we have or the medium that we choose. And then surround yourself with relationships that help you paint more, that when you talk to them, they make you feel like a better painter. When you hear from them, they inspire you to use different words. When you think of them, it makes you want to try something crazy that you've never tried before because you know your critical fear are there. And so for me, whatever creative means for you, whether it's words like Nikhil and I spoke today, whether it's a podcast, whether it's a painting, whether it's writing an email, whether it's building the best tech for a funnel that you could ever build, that's your art. But when you're in that art, utilize yourself as the artist, knowing no one else can paint it like you can, but also those people that you surround yourself with, the conversations that you have. You're constantly creating art, whether you intentionally mean to or not, as Nikhil so said. And so in my opinion, the thing that makes art beautiful that you shared is that art always comes from emotion and the heart. And sometimes for me, when I'm in the rawest of emotion, I can get stuck in that trap. And it's those critical relationships around me that are like, George, paint. George, post the song. And you hear them enough that you just start trusting it. And then you spend the rest of your life best friends with these people. And you get on calls, whether they're recorded or not. And I will tell you that our phone conversations are the same. Our FaceTimes are the same. Our text message is the same, and it's a whole lot of thanks for the reminder, let's go paint. Thanks for the reminder, let's go paint. And I think that that's the beauty in it all. And so I genuinely appreciate you sharing so much of your heart, man, and just being in my life and being so incredible and constantly reinventing yourself for the betterment. And like, I have that beautiful seat of being number two in Asraya, which I'm proud of. And I feel like that's where I belong in the world, is everybody's number two. And also, you know, with you guys in partnership and helping to grow it. And it's an incredible thing to witness two of the most powerful men that I know that are heart-centered and living examples birth something of creation and be the examples in front of me as well that I get to learn from and support from as well with Asraya. And so, like, I turned this whole podcast into a gratitude session for you. But I genuinely, genuinely appreciate it. So I want to do this because obviously I'm going to tag you everywhere. I'm going to do everything, but I want people to connect with you. And by the way, he's mine. Everybody just stop right now, just before you get it in your head. My endowment is deep and this one I'll fight for. You can try. You can try, but you ain't getting this one. You can come borrow some of Nikhil, but I'm keeping him selfish. No, I'm just kidding. I'll share him with everybody because he's got love to share. But where's the absolute, like, your favorite place for people to connect with you?
Yeah, so you could find me on Instagram at primal.alchemy.
Yeah.
Or you can visit my website, nikhilkale.com, and just follow the contact link through there and happy to connect.
Yeah, and I'd say Instagram is great, and most of our peeps listen to Instagram. Mm-hmm. So if I remember, yours is primal.alchemy, right?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, so it's P-R-I-M-A-L dot and then A-L-C. How do you spell alchemy? Oh, yeah, A-L-C-H-E-M-Y.
Perfect.
See, I'm learning, bro. Take me to school. I can't spell that other that one yet, but we're good with alchemy. And then if you guys want to check out his website, we'll have everything linked in the show notes. And Nikhil and I are constantly together. He's in the alliance with us. He's my brother. You will see him. You'll be around him. We will do many more podcasts. But if you want to go to his website, I'll spell it for you. I'll spell it just to make it easy. But it's Nikhil Kale. So it's NIKHILKALE.com, right?
Perfect.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I know how to spell my friends' names. That makes sense. I'm winning my art today, bro. I'm winning my art. I spelled your name correctly. I win. Oh, there we go. Okay. I saw the fist pump and then it came in slow. And so I do want to ask you one final question, my friend, to land the plane before I go get my little one from school. you know the show, you've been on it, and I'll save the whole Men in Black story, but I just want you to envision you can tattoo any departing wisdom on their souls that they take with them forever. What would your tattoo wisdom be for everybody?
Tattooed wisdom would be embrace the temporal nature of the moment. This life is fleeting. Every moment is a gift. Don't let it fall by the wayside, but embrace it with an open heart and celebrate the art that you are.
Holy moly. And thanks for the podcast title. Celebrate the art that you are. Bro, you got to end the show with like one of your poetic masteries. So this is what it looks like when Nikhil just puts his stamp of like, hi, my name's Banksy, and every time I speak, everybody wants to spend $20 million on my painting. I love it, bro. I will take it all day. I will gash you up all day. I will support you all day. I love you to fucking pieces. And I just wanted to say it on the recording because I'm going to say it 1,000 more times when we hit end in about 1 minute as well. And so I'm just getting it out publicly so everybody in the world knows. And so for me, I have a different ask. For everybody, I have a feeling that you have some very, very deep, critical, close relationships with you that have the ability to go deep and have the ability to change the colors on your canvas or how excited you are to create art. But depth isn't found accidentally. It's created by the person who wants it. And so my invitation for you is to go create depth today. Deep conversations with someone you care about your goals, about your mission, about your art, about something beautiful that you want to share or bring to the world, and just see if you get a little sharper, you get a little more inspiration, or they add a dash of glitters or sprinkles to your paint colors and see what happens. But I feel like if you could ask me what the greatest strategy and tactic is to success, it's to have friends like Nikhil. And so go find one. Go create one. Come grab or leverage one that you have, but take this as the permission slip to just go lean into it, because it's not going to lean into itself. And the worst thing you can do is climb a ladder that's leaning up the wrong wall. And I've yet to have a friend like Nikhil that ever lets me put art into the world that doesn't belong. And so it's a collaborative effort. It's a team effort, and everything we create is collaborative for all of us and from us. And so we can leverage all of those things around us to help us make beautiful art in the world. And so Nikhil said it, I'll say it. I think that's where we win the game, my friend. I think that's where we win the game. So thank you. And for everybody listening, this has been another one of those wild rides on the Mind of George show, where I genuinely believe it belongs in a straitjacket. So I share the safest parts on the canvas with you, called the podcast. And so we'll either see you in the next episode, or you'll hear us in your earbuds. But me and Nikhil are out. So go see him on Insta, slide into his DMs, and we'll see you all soon.